good morning, everyone, and thank you for everyone that's on time. We certainly want to welcome the Director General of Trade and Industry, Lionel October, and his team. Great to see you again. And just officially for the record, I want to express our appreciation to the Honourable Kalaku, who chaired. All right, I'll hold on to that. Members, on the apology list for members here, I'm not looking at apologies. I'll just check. It's only a late apology, the Honourable Alberts. Otherwise, we don't have an apology from the ES. So please make sure about that. Fine. Those are the apologies. Before we adopt the agenda, I would just like to shift the program around and ask to do the SEZ first and then go into the consideration of the budget vote. So on that basis, did I see a hand? Yes, Honourable McPherson.
Thanks, Chair. Before you start, I feel it's important to bring it to the attention of this committee. Yes, well, it's actually an issue I'd like to just raise with you now to put onto the agenda.
I'm only saying this, Dean, because we haven't opened the meeting.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, I'll wait for you to give me an opportunity to do that.
Can we please adopt the agenda first? Right. Yes, I see that. Honourable Williams, seconded by the Honourable Mkongi. On that basis, then, with the apologies up front, we're going to be starting with the SEZ. Now, is it anything to do with what is on the agenda or the budget vote report, or is it something you wish me to put on the agenda tomorrow?
Well, yeah, Chair, it's another letter from AMSA, ArcelorMittal South Africa, to their customers announcing the third price increase in as many months. Despite them assuring ITAC and the department that they would not do so, this is now the third consecutive one that they've done. And I just want to table that to the committee's attention and ask that we call into this committee as soon as possible to ask them what is going on and why they keep putting up their prices in spite of tariff protection, because we can't seem to get an answer on that. So I'd like to do that. And Chair, and I'd really like you to see if we can get them here as soon as possible.
Well, they are, Honourable Mkongi.
Thank you very much, Chair President. I'm not against the proposal that we called this entity to come, but I'm feeling, don't we need a very, very, very serious debate in South Africa on the question of the steel? You know, because I'm following the debate in England and what is the posture of their parliament and government regarding this particular question. And seemingly in South Africa, we're very afraid to take the bull by its horn, by its own, and deal with this matter once and for all. What is the challenge? I'm just asking, don't we need a structured debate and a political decision as parliament what we must do about the crisis of steel in South Africa?
The matter has come up before, and we've made it clear that steel must be dealt with on the program itself. Now, as we move towards the end of this particular term, not term, but quarter, which I understand is at the end of April, is it? May, end of May. I indicated, I think it was 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago again, that the strategic minerals that affect our production and manufacturing need to be addressed, and that it needs to go to Manco for programming. So there's no disagreement that it's an important issue to address. And as we all know, there's also every reason to invite stakeholders and those involved to address the matter. So it is on the, it is with Manco, We are having a Manco this week, I believe, after the debate. Is that right, Honourable Whip? Sometime this week. Honourable Kalaku, I just wanted to know that you were sitting here when I just expressed our appreciation for your for chairing the committee last week and also undertaking all the administration involved in a very busy time of the budget process. Thank you very much to all of you. On that note then, we are going to, I'm looking at the DG as well. Are you happy to move with the SEZs first? Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair and members.
I also want to express my condolences, I suppose, to the Kumarum's family, Mr. Naidu's family, the late Mr. Kumarum Naidu, because he played a very active role in this committee, briefing us and engaging with us. Sorry, DG, for that interruption.
No, thanks for that, Honourable Chair. Let me just, the presentation will be done by Alfred Tao, and let me just introduce the team. I think everybody knows Sipho Zikodi, who's Deputy Director General for the SEZ and Black Economic Empowerment Program, and then Kolisi Machamba. He's been working on the SEZ program, and he will be shortly be going to really work on the Musina IDZ, the one in Limpopo, and he's been working extensively with a major Chinese investment and so on. I'll just make one or two introductory remarks, but really the full presentation will be done by Alfred. Chair, important to note is that we've seen in the past 3 or 4 years the minister requested that we do an urgent strategic review of the performance of the industrial development zone, as it was called then, because he was of the view when he came in 2009 that the industrial development program was just confined to two ports and a bit in Richards Bay, but it was mainly Kuga and East London as industrial development zones. And he said we should review the entire program and come up with a completely new program and a turnaround strategy. So we are about halfway through that turnaround strategy, but the important thing we can report on is that we are starting to see some really strong progress in a number of IDZs, a turnaround in some IDZs, but also we see promising new special economic zones that have been showing. We've also, as we reported, the main purpose of this program is really, and I want to emphasize this, it's really just part of our IPAP, of our industrialization process. We've got many tools in that toolkit, which include sector programs like the auto program, clothing program, film program. But this is one of the toolkits, but also the biggest part of this program is diversification in terms of the concentration. Because as we know, our economy is really concentrated in three regions or three cities, which is Johannesburg, Gauteng, Durban, and KZN, and then the Western Cape. The aim of the program is really to diversify. The final point to make is that this program, as when we did the legislation and the new strategy, we said this is really a partnership program, because in the old end, IDZ is run by the municipality in that area, and then it is also driven and overseen by the province, and then national plays the overall guiding role. So it's really a three-way partnership between all three tiers of government, and where you see successful special economic zones or IDZs is where you get that cooperation between all three tiers of government working together. I will then, as I said, hand over to Alfred.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair. as the DG indicates, through the SEZ program, what we really wanted to do is attract investments into the targeted regions. And what you see here, just to start, is to begin to see the fruits of the turnaround, the new policy and support measures introduced after shifting from the IDZ program into the SEZ program. We have not fully implemented all the changes we need to introduce, but these are the beginning of some of the fruits of that new journey we've undertaken. So if you would visit Kuha, these are the companies that you begin to see. In the past, the Kuha IDZ was mainly just filled with logistics companies, but now it's more and more advanced manufacturing that's beginning to develop around Kuha. There's energy, there's FAO, the Chinese automotive maker, and a lot of some of the BPO companies, global companies there. Above all, we can see that Kuha has really led the way in turning around the program. So you would see a total of over 33 companies today that are active and operational in Kuha. This is a list of investors that you would go and find in the East London IDZ. East London IDZ is predominantly filled up with auto component manufacturers who are supporting the auto industry there. So these are just some of the investors that are already on the ground as we speak. Feltex, MC, Synchro, TI Automotive, Reinforcing Steel Contractors, Ocean Wise, Vehicle Delivery Services, Nolan, Pilo, and many others. There's Matla Diamond Works, Linde and Vierman RSA. So what you see in East London also is a lot of manufacturing that's taking place there. These are the companies that we found in the new zone of the Dube Trade Port. We have Samsung there, Schenker, Odari, Rectal, Klein, Namek. I can just name a few. So the message here is simply that the SEZ program is beginning to deliver on its promise. And of course you see some of the support institutions there. The SAPS is there on the ground, SARS is there, just to ensure that the services that investors require, they are able to provide. This is a summary of operational investments, secured investments, those that have signed but are not yet operational, and the jobs in there. So what you would see is that through this program, at least 75,000 jobs, combination of both direct and indirect, including construction, have been created over time. Now, this is in itself the same information, but just more structured in such a way that you can see there's Kuha. It has 33 companies there. 29 have already signed. They are going to locate. What is happening at the moment is just preparation for them to be able to settle. Five are already negotiating to come in, and you'll see the difference when I talk to the numbers as well. East London has 28 operational. Four new investors are being prepared to locate. There are discussions with 10 to locate in the Richards Bay. For a long time has been the main underperforming IDZ compared to the others. mainly had two for a long time. Now already we can see that they are preparing to locate nine, and they are already negotiating with nine new ones, and the last figures are just for Dubai Trade Court, which is new. Now this is the value of operational investments. The investors in Guha have invested 6.4 billion to date. East London 1.8 billion, Richards Bay 820 million, Dubai Trade Port 372 million. But as you can see, there's a huge turnaround in the value of incoming investment. Guha has 6.4 billion, but already 6.8 billion worth of investment are located. East London already has an additional 1.2 billion located. Richards Bay, although they just nine new investments located there, the value is 10.2 billion located there. Dubai Trade Port, which is new, already has 1.7 billion locating in the zone. Now, this is the value of potential investment that if as a country we are successful in negotiating and locating, we would be able to get. In Guha alone, there's an opportunity to get 46.3 billion worth of investment in addition to those that are already located. In East London, there's an opportunity for 13.7 billion. Dubai Trade Port, there's an opportunity for 1.8 billion. We have excluded Richards Bay because we are still auditing their figures just to ensure that when we report them, all of us are happy and satisfied about the robustness of those engagements and the figures. This slide tells us just the number of jobs created in each. Guha at the moment has over 7,000 direct jobs. East London IGZ almost 2,000. Richards Bay 300. Dubai Trade Port already, although it's new, over 500 direct jobs. As I indicated earlier on, the total of construction and indirect jobs stands at 68,000 at the moment. This is the investment pipeline for the new zones, not the existing ones that we are negotiating. In Musina, the investment value of the metallurgical cluster is actually $3.6 billion US dollars. If I use today's exchange rate, this would be over 50 billion. But because of the fluctuating things, it's just safe to say 3.6 billion US dollars was investment. Minimum of that would be 40 billion. Atlantis, there's already a 300 million investment there. In Upington, there's an opportunity for an 800 million. In Ekurhuleni, around Springs for the fuel cells, already we have this 1.2 billion worth of investment. There's 60 billion investment. This is the heavy investment in the steel plant, which at the moment this one is suspended because the investor wanted to wait until the stability in the steel market. The new one of the Maluti Apofung, there's a minimum of 2 billion signed in the investment already there. I will come back to this slide. Let me just talk to this with the DG touch. What we are really trying to do with the SEZ program is to attract direct investment, both foreign and domestic, and also to use the program to build additional industrial hubs. And the zones that we are spreading to, even some of the new ones, are giving us huge opportunity to do that. But lastly also, we have an opportunity to use the program to build strategic industrial capabilities. We are doing fuel cells, we'll be able to do locomotives, auto components, ICT, electronics, etc. Now, if we do those things well, the outcomes that we are looking for is that we need to see an increase in the stock and quality of direct investment. We'll accelerate growth, we'll increase value-added exports and not just export commodities, create jobs, and also diversify our industrial economy in terms of regions. This is the major support measures at the moment, the SEZ incentives package. The major one is the 15% corporate tax, which has made South Africa to begin to compete globally with some of the major investment destinations. There are still countries that, for example, would offer 10%, but we never had this before. So this has been a major breakthrough. But we also provide infrastructure development through the IDZ. We are able to build ready-made infrastructure for investors when they come in. They're just able to plug and play. There's an enhanced 12i for SEZ investment because they're duty-free and VAT-free arrangements on imports of inputs. And this slide is just intended to summarize what we're doing differently from the IDZ. The IDZ in the main focus on coastal regions or regions which would have an international port. So we never supported all the regions of the country. Through the SEZ program, we will go to all regions of the country, especially where there's potential. Secondly, the IDZ program really never had any meaningful incentive for ports. So it really made no difference whether an investor is in a zone or outside. Through this SEZ program, it makes a lot of difference whether you are in or out of the zone because of the package. And what we were doing in the past was merely an incentive program that just revolved around infrastructure development. And now what we are doing through the SEZ program, we are looking at all the elements of the industrial ecosystems. We will intervene in building skills, in technology support, in incubation, in working with SMEs, and many other support measures that one will talk to later. Now from here, what we are dealing with is just to explain the work that we have to do to create an enabling environment to ensure that the investors keep coming. We have had to do work on legislation and regulation, which we have done the bulk thereof. There's just work to be done on things like governance and others. We now have an SEZ advisory board that helps the minister on policy, strategy, and any other issue on SEZ implementation. We provide support to provinces. We have helped provinces set up project management units. We have helped them with planning, with feasibility studies, and as DG indicated, in some cases we are now seconding project managers to ensure that the projects don't stall. We have a forum with all CEOs at the moment that we meet periodically to share best practice, to understand what their challenges are, and intervene together in those things. We have a capacity building program that at the moment we have mainly been implementing in partnership with the Chinese government. We've been sending people there over the last 3 years. We still have 2 more years to go. And even the industrial parks program will benefit from this capacity building program. We have work to do on marketing and promotion. We would be arranging for SEZ investment seminars in a number of key investor hubs around the world. We're doing monitoring and evaluation. We're checking individual IGZs and SEZs. We're looking at the program as a collective. And then we are doing a lot of work on coordination between departments and across the spheres, just to ensure that all other government agencies are playing their part in this process. So this is just a summary of some of the work we have done to date. I won't dwell on it, I've just explained this. Let me just indicate that we now have a joint task team with between the DTI, National Treasury, SARS, and ITEC on issues that have to do with SEZ implementation, issues of customs, taxes, and other related matters. Now, this is just an indication of some of the industrial ecosystems we have to strengthen to ensure that the whole system works together. We are building industrial infrastructure. We have to work with other partners to ensure the social infrastructure, to ensure that, for example, in Saldanha Bay, in Busina, we need to strengthen training infrastructure there. We are working with DST on matters of research and development. We have an incubation program in the DTI that will implement use to strengthen the program. I've spoken to marketing. There's work on investment facilitation that we have to do. There's work on logistics. We have been meeting with Transnet and TMPA on some of the things they have to do at the port. We are providing support on productivity for companies when they need it. We have a productivity support programs in the department and in other departments. There's work on innovation and technology. We're doing some work on financing and incentives, which some of this work is done by GAS, other by Malebo. And then there's this work on one-stop shop led by our investment division and, of course, coordinating with the presidency. So all of these things we have to work together to ensure that we don't strengthen one area and leave the other. This is just an indication of some of the things we want to begin to look at. So I will just talk to designations because the others have spoken to investment and the jobs. At this stage, we don't have sufficient data to begin to report on export, but we are building our systems to get there. In terms of designations, we have a total of 7 designated zones at the moment. But of those 7, the first 4 on the left are the ones that are operational. The middle batch, Owar Tambo, Maludi, Apofung, Saldanha Bay, they are at different phases of setting up their operations. So these ones are getting ready to locate and support investors. And the last 3 are the applications that we have and are assessing in the department. What one can report is that the work on the Musina Makado one is quite advanced and should be concluded soon. And now this is the summary of those investments. In short, in total, there's 69 investors on site in all our zones. 47 new ones are locating, and we are in discussions with 29 investors who have shown interest to locate. This slide just shows the progress that we have made in the relative short time since 2013 when we began implementation. What you will see is that while we have a 9.4 billion total investments at the moment, we are locating 19.9 billion now. So and he's just setting up infrastructure and all of those things. So this web of made of investment to be located, which is an improvement of 111.7%. Guha has shown an improvement or increase of 105.3% over its value of investment. Richards Bay, which has been struggling for a long, long time, and it's understandable, the improvement that it succeeded in is quite huge, over 1,000%. And Dube Trade Corp, which is new, already shows a 456% improvement on the value of investments. Let me just conclude with this slides that I wanted to show, just on the challenges and goals that we are focusing on going forward. We do have to build capacity in provinces and resources for infrastructure development, and that's why we're beginning to second project managers to provinces, because we really have to accelerate our ability for infrastructure development. And in many of these towns, land is becoming a major constraint, but we are working with the Department of Rural Development and Land Affairs. They have helped us to unlock land in many of the rural regions. Going forward, what we want to do is to increase and diversify the investments in designated zones. So we will put greater effort on marketing and promotion to ensure visibility of these zones. But the other goal is to ensure that once the investments are there, the impact of those investments on the host regions and communities is much better and stronger. And lastly is to improve sustainability. That means we have to deal with issues of governance, financial sustainability, environmental sustainability, and others. So this is just a summary of the body of work that we have going forward. Let me hand over to the DG to give
just to then conclude, as you said, for this year, our big priority is to finalize the regulations. That is out for comment, and that will be finalized soon. Also, the incentives will be coming into effect this year, the 15% corporate tax rate. And then, as I indicated, simultaneously with the reorganizing the entire architecture of the program, we have been working with the province, and we said we will work on 10 new economic zones. And that was after the provinces went through a major process to identify new. So out of that 10 now, we can say 3 have been designated already, Saldanha, Dube Trade Port, and Maluti Apufong. So that is already done, and they will be moving into operational phase in the course of this year, next year. And then, as indicated, we are working on the 3 new designations, which is Atlantis, the northwest one, Bojanelo, and then, as I said, the big one, which is the one in Limpopo, Mosina IDZ. And then, as I said, we will then be including the feasibility studies and stepping up work on the other 4, which is really ones like Upington, which we want to keep going. It's a bit slow there. The other one is the Wild Coast, SEZ around Port St. John's and Tata, and as said, and the one in Mpumalanga. But as I said, I think in summary then, what we are starting to see some turnaround in the special economic zones, but as I said, we are only midway through the turnaround strategy, and as I said, we will be working intensely with the provinces. Our plan is that in terms of the new regulations, we will be helping provinces for the first 3 years. We will be helping them intensely with project managers, with feasibility studies and with operational costs, or what we call startup costs. But after the 3 years, we are telling provinces they'll have to take over the operational expenses. Because as you know, these things must be monitored close to the ground. People pay themselves sometimes excessive salaries or bonuses, or they run away with operational costs. So after 3 years, the province takes over and monitors the operational costs, and then we will only continue to provide infrastructure support and support with marketing of the special economic zone. So, Honourable Chair, that's a summary of the progress to date on the SEZ program.
Thank you very much, DG October, but also thank you to yourself, Chief Director, Mr. Alfred Tarr, and of course the others. I see the DG there of DDG Special Economic Zones and Economic Transformation, Mr. Zakorda. Thank you. And of course we will come to others who are here. I think Mr. Machamba, isn't it, you introduced. Thank you. Yes, so there we have that special presentation. I noticed the issue of Saldanha Bay was brought up, and it was one of the things I noticed when I was overseas. Not only does the minister probably welcome the public protector's report, which exonerates him from unethical conduct allegations which had been made, and sadly, we did as chair, and I'm sure you as a committee also welcome this exoneration, etc. And I think we really ought to walk more carefully when making allegations of this particular nature. But be that as it may...
Chairperson, sorry, I'm going to have to respond to that.
Put your hand up, please, and allow me to finish the sentence. I was going to say we will now take an engagement. Honourable Hill Lewis?
You see now, Chairperson, you raised that matter of the report. Now, I didn't raise it, so you raised it. Now, I'm going to respond to you. And I really think before you raise such a thing in committee, you should actually go and read the Public Protector's report, because the Public Protector is empowered to investigate breaches of the Executive Ethics Act, and she could find no evidence that Minister Davies had done so. But she did not exonerate the Department of Trade and Industry at all. She did not. I'm very happy to pull up the report for you if you disagree with me. I have it here. She said that she found some things that happened at that launch unacceptable, and that the Director General should investigate them further. But because she's not empowered to investigate the Director General, she didn't find on that.
Well, thank now you very much. I have read the report.
Well, then you shouldn't have said what you said, because that was disingenuous.
I was referring to the minister at that point.
Well, then you shouldn't have said what you said, because that was disingenuous.
No,
that's
no.
Not what the report said at all.
The report made it clear Minister Davies had been exonerated, but I don't want to turn...
No, let's read from the report then, Chair.
You raised the report. No, I'm not going to entertain that further. I want to get into the report.
Let's get into the report.
Honourable Bongani, I just said we are not going to.
On a point of order, you don't get to impugn me in this committee.
I did not impugn you.
You did impugn me. You said that I should be more careful when making allegations. And
I did not use your name at all.
But everyone knows that my name's in the report. I made the allegation.
No.
Sorry,
shut up. Members, I am...
Well, don't come to you. You've been to it 2 years. And go and do what you usually do.
Adjourn the committee.
No.
Shall we proceed? I'm going to proceed with the engagement.
I would like to address you, Chairperson.
No, I am saying we are moving on.
But then do not impugn me in this committee and then just move on without giving me the chance to defend myself. That's unacceptable. And that is not due process.
Right. Can we please have hands up? Those who wish to engage, Honourable Mkongi. I don't know who's at the back with a hand. Okay. All right. Honourable Esterhazen, Honourable Quernolf, Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Montash, and Honourable MacPherson. In that, Honourable Shibambu. Have yourself been Honourable Mkongi.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm not going to be addressing how many people were wearing T-shirts of the ANC in the lunch in Sudan. They have the right to wear ANC T-shirts. But what I'm very concerned about is that the lunch was officially in 2013. And then now this IDZ, we are being told again that it's not operational, and we're there.
Oh.
We saw the readiness. I mean, what are the bottlenecks in terms of this IDZ to be on the off the ground and work? Because that particular region, I think, was targeted because of the massive unemployment of our people there. And this IDZ was going to contribute a lot in terms of pushing back the families of unemployment. Secondly, I also want the question of the Atlantis to be brought in the debate. What is happening about Atlantis? Because if you go to Atlantis, you will know what was the apartheid arrangement in terms of pushing people to Atlantis and giving them jobs. But now that hub, collapsed. So what is the problem? There is one thing that you are raising in your first slide. There are many companies, and those companies, most of them is American and European. Now, in the spirit of Africa integration and the question of the industrialization of Africa, I don't see any country or any company that comes from Africa. What is the problem in line with that? Lastly, Chairperson, the question of the international public finance architecture, it is transforming and changing. I'm impressed that you are working hand in hand with SARS, with Treasury, around this particular thing. So this operation, is it a one-stop shop that we're talking about, which was announced by the President and the Minister, or is an ad hoc arrangement that you're putting? I'm not really impressed with those percentages. I did maths one up until maths three. This 100,000 percentage increase, I don't understand. May I explain this thing? 105.2% increase or improvement, and then one is 1,000% increase. What does that mean in real terms?
Thank you. Honourable Mkongi, Honourable Esterhazen.
Thank you, Chair. Excuse me. I've got a little bit of concern that most of this designated operational zones are the coastal areas. And most of these operations use downstream manufacturing, mostly from the steel industry, which is inland. And we've actually seen that with the mining industry, with the development pricing that I started, with the mine gate prices that was established, that it nearly killed the mining industry because it ruined the downstream industries that were supported to do this. And a lot of this also, and correct me please, I'm more asking this, if these companies would then, some components do get imported, how will that affect the import parity if that, you know, mine, like mine gate prices delivered at a gate? And also, the DG of October mentioned that for the first 3 years there will be assistance in establishing these companies. The tax incentive that I get, I think it's only for 10 years. Has that, then will it make it 13 years then? Or is it still just like 10 years? Because it takes a long time to set up these companies. And also, many of these companies, previously a lot of companies had used the address, maybe in an economic zone, and they still have a business somewhere else, and they got these benefits and incentives. But also, a lot of companies does have their main area of manufacturing somewhere else, and they do go to one of these zones. And how does this 90% rule affect them? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Yesterhazen. Honourable Kornhoff.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one question on slide 9, where you're talking about the operational security and pipeline investors. I just want to know, what's the timeline? You know, because if you look at Kuga, there's 29, and you know, it's quite a considerable amount, but what's the timeline? You know, is it indefinite? You know, what's the percentage of those potential investors that will carry on? I know the steel guys are out for the time being, but how many of those 29, for instance, are, you know, on a balance not to go ahead?
Thank you, Honourable Kornhoff. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thank you. If you look at the budget for the MTF, you'll see that you have slashed the budget allocated to the SEZ program very significantly. I think it's the biggest budget, it may be the biggest budget cut or the second biggest budget cut in the department. Not that budget and money is everything, but it's a difficult case to make that you are prioritizing this as much as you are, and that you have a vision of 10 new SEZs in the various provinces once the provinces essentially get their processes complete, when there's almost no new money allocated for new SEZs whatsoever, and the money allocated in the MTF is barely enough for the existing SEZs that have already been declared. Even in that respect, probably not enough. If you look at the kind of investment that needs to take place in Saldanha SEZ, for example, the budget that you've allocated over the MTF for Saldanha is the kind of bare minimum. So how do you reconcile those two things, the budget allocation and your ambitions?
Thank you, Honourable Hill Lewis. Honourable Mantash.
Chairperson, I have two questions, but one has been covered by Honourable, the one who spoke before, Honourable Lewis. Because I wanted to check how much time is given to those non-operational companies in those SEZs and ITZs. But the other one is, do you have a targeted training program for those people who are going to operate in their provinces? Because it doesn't have to just say we will be taking care of you for 3 years, and when you leave, they all collapse. What are the targeted training programs for those areas to ensure sustainability of the SEZ? But I also want to say, Chairperson, I am delighted when I look at the department moving away from targeting coastal regions for development and moving into the interior. Yes, much as other people are not impressed with that, I am impressed, because our base is in the rural area, and the worst experience to poverty is there. So I would be surprised if those who have been in comfort zones can enjoy or be happy about what you're doing now. Thank you.
Honourable McPherson.
Thanks, Chair. When someone says that they're getting 1,000% increase on something, you know, I mean, one always has to look at the numbers, because it's very easy to go from 1 to 2. So your base is, you know, 0 or 1. It's very easy to jump up like that. But I was in Richards Bay yesterday, and I can tell you that the fields around Richards Bay are very green. And that's because there's nothing there. There's no new investment taking place. And it concerns me, because it's been like that for some time. And we've also been told for some time how, you know, Richards Bay is almost on the cusp of taking off, but it doesn't seem to do so. Now, I think it was the DG that said that the provinces are responsible for the operational costs after 3 years, and that greatly worries me, because you know, there's a lot of money that's being invested on our behalf into these IDZs, but what guarantee do we have from the provinces that they'll pick up that operational cost? Do you know that they've budgeted for them, in fact, EG, for their outer year budgets, and do you in fact have binding agreements with the provinces that they will in fact pick up those operational costs, and then based on that answer I may come for a follow up, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable MacPherson. Is it Honourable Shibambu?
Thank you, Chairperson. The, you see, the ruling party, they said they are going to create 5 million jobs. That is what they said in their manifesto within the 5 years from 2014. And it appeared that the core of those jobs are going to be created through industrial expansion. And we get a report that it's only 10,000 jobs that are created out of 10 billion rand investment. And it's over a period of 5 years. The development of those assets. So you need possibly an investment. So it's about an investment of 1 million rand per one job. So you need to create 1 million jobs, you need about a trillion rand. Or 100 million. So you've got a far much bigger dilemma. I think this a conceptual, possibly ideological problem with the foundation of how you are dealing with the issue of industrial expansion. I think it's fundamentally flawed. That is what we should be speaking about. Perhaps there must be a dedicated discussion of how do we expend the money on labor absorptive sectors of the economy and which ones are those. Because the formula that we have taken thus far will not unemploy, will not create jobs for the 8 million unemployed people who in 2019 when we go to other elections will be more than 10 million. I think that we have to have a thorough discussion of what are the labor absorptive sectors of the economy and industrial sectors that we must concentrate most of our resources in. Because even out of scientific desktop research, even out of practical observation, what are called investments are not labor absorptive. Samsung employs less than 200 people, if I'm not mistaken. The company that makes wind towers there in Port Elizabeth, Nkova, employs very few people, I think about 60 or something like that. And it's companies that are worth billions of rands in some instances. So we're not like, oh, like it. We have to have a different conception, because one is that it won't deal with the jobs question. Like if the pattern continues in the manner in which it has started now. But two is that it has also deal with the ownership question, because majority of the investors, if not all, are multinational corporations. Maybe there are lots of local investors in these SEZs, like Goha Dairy, the guys who cut steel in the Duluth trade port. But majority of these are foreign companies, which by the fact that they are foreign, you can't rely on them on anything. They can easily leave. They can leave tomorrow. If they see an opportunity in Vietnam, they can just say, no, we are relocating. And what that means is that you must always shift your regulatory environment to suit what others are doing elsewhere. It's one of the things that must look into far much more closely. But also the kind of trade agreements that have been entered into with the countries where these investments come from. Is that, well, I don't know, there's a new legislation which are passing in terms of, which has been passed in terms of investment. But some of the trade agreements will preclude you from imposing the transformative interventions in those companies. Like, I don't know if Samsung will agree to have black ownership if that is what you are going to ultimately reach.
I don't know if the FAW will, what you say, what 26% local budget, I don't know if they want to agree. So there should be a thorough discussion of, and it's a political discussion on what is our conceptualization of industrial policy and what are the lessons. Like, and I think a greater lesson could be those that industrialized late in terms of for South Korea. I was saying to the two ministers privately that maybe there must be a study taught to South Korea, because when they were focusing on industrial expansion, the emphasis was on development of their own brands and protection of their own brands. That was the major issue. It was not about incentivizing foreign direct investment of FWA and all sorts of other brands which were put there, majority of which are foreign, which were displayed colorfully on the screen there. The central emphasis was, and it's not even innovation, it was not even invention, it was to learn from the developed economies, okay, how is the car made and how can't we make our own, and then invest in that. So it was industrial expansion through learning. And that is one thing which I think, like, the discourse must shift to focus on, because I think, I don't know how much money spent, maybe the DG will respond, how much money are we spending to get the 10 billion investments? How much money do we spend on infrastructure? How much tax do we forego to attract the 10 billion infrastructure place? Direct, because the other ones, I don't know if they're jobs, but construction most of the time is temporary. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Siobhan Burns. We need to turn to the department now and ask the department through the DG to respond to this in a period of 5 to 7 minutes, please.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think many of them were comments, and I think I'll have to resort to the old tactic of giving the difficult questions to my colleagues. I think the starting with Honourable Mukongi, I think the first one, I think maybe Alfred and Tolisi can report on Saldanha and the progress here. But as I indicate, these special economic zones are long-term investments. You're basically creating from almost from nothing a whole complete industrial zone area for industrialization. So in the first few years, a big part of it is to get the infrastructure into place, to build the roads, bulk water, electricity, and just leveling the land. A big part is also to get the access and control of the land, because obviously you don't start from a clean slate. The land is owned by sometimes by private companies, sometimes by the SOEs, sometimes by IDC and so on. So what Saldanha has been engaged in is in that process. They've done a very impressive in terms of laying the basic infrastructure. They've also set up a proper operational a management company. And also, as you know, there is, because it is designated as an oil and gas hub, they have now attracted a significant investment in terms of building the port infrastructure for it to be able to become an oil and gas hub and so on. Can things move faster? I think, as I said, we established a full-time team in the department. As you know, Sipho Sikhode here, that division only has two jobs now, and it's been changed. It's called SEZ and Broadening Participation Program. So half the team is working on these special economic zones. But as I indicated, you need the full, because the day-to-day company that operates the zone is a provincial company. It's owned by Westgro. The board is selected by the province and so on. So as I indicated at the beginning, this is really a partnership approach. You can only move if you have the synergy between the province, but then also the municipality, because they own the land. and they are big players there. But so I can say, I mean, I said we'll get a detailed report, but I think the period is long because of infrastructure in the beginning. The issue of Atlantis is, as you said, is an interesting case, and I think it lays out maybe some of the discussions I missed last week about why are we, let's say, reviving what Linda Onso called these apartheid era industrial parks. And I think, as you know, Atlantis is a very clear example where companies were attracted with a 7-year labor incentive. When the 7 years was finished, like you take the Extrufarm plant, as you know, the Extrufarm's main plant of a few thousand people is here in Salt River. They located then a branch there, but the branch of Extrufarm only lasted for 7 years. As soon as the subsidy dried up, they closed down, and then Atlantis became a bit of a ghost town. As I said, we unfortunately, you don't invest your industrial landscape. You know, even if it was caused by apartheid, that is the way we're starting from. That's where there's existing infrastructure, that's where people are working. But most importantly, surrounding these apartheid era parks is thousands of people that are looking for jobs. So you have to. You can't only create new ones. You must develop even your old ones. So that is the strategy with these industrial parks, and that is the strategy with Atlantis. As I said, the fortunate thing about Atlantis is that they managed to, for example, attract, as you know, Hisense, which is the Chinese multinational. And as the minister reported, Hisense is reporting now that this Hisense factory in Atlantis is the second most efficient plant globally in the Hisense table. So it just shows what capabilities we have in an area like Atlantis and what we can do. So in terms of the work around the industrial park, a big expansion, which will be different from what Honorable Shivambu said, is that will these investors run away? Are they footloose? I think in the first era under apartheid, they were footloose because they only attracted mainly Taiwanese investors who, as I said, when they set the trial up, they left. We are trying to locate people for the long term, so Hisense is going to be a big part. They said they will expand once we get the special economic zone. Okay. So we will build a big part of the Atlantis one around Hisense and electronics part and so on. So as I said, currently we are, they've completed lots of the feasibility studies, which again also takes 2-3 years. They've completed all the work because before the board recommends the IDZ for approval or SEZ, the access very clearly, the place must have long-term economic potential. That's why, so we don't create ghost towns, we don't locate expensive infrastructure in an area which doesn't have long-term potential. So what the feasibility study must uncover is, does this area have potential in the long term? So that has been now completed for Atlantis and for Messina, and those are the ones we are assessing at the moment. I think, Honorable Mukongi, you correctly say that all of these companies are European or United States companies. But as I said, that is not the picture of only the IDZ. Our entire FDI in the country, as I said, 90% comes from the US and Europe, but it's not only a South African phenomenon, it's a global phenomenon. Because the most industrialized countries are all Western economies. Now, you can only industrialize by building on that base. Just like China, South Korea, all of them, they used, as Honorable Shivambu is right, even if Hyundai, they built their own vehicles, but for the first 10, 20 years, they used Mercedes-Benz engines in Hyundai. So you have to rely for your industrial base. You have to get the technology from the world leaders, and then hopefully you'll be able to build on that. So, as I said, there is unfortunately, apart from South Africa, there are very few, except for Dangote, he's got a massive industrial companies. Apart from them, we are seeing no significant African or from the rest of the continent investors. On the question of the one-stop shop, I think we'll be doing a presentation tomorrow, but so I won't go into that. But safe to say is, as you know, we've launched the one-stop shop called Invest SA, where we're basically putting all our services on attracting investment into one place, and we're getting all the departments, Home Affairs, SARS, to second people to DPI or to the one-stop shop. But we will be rolling out over the next 2 years, we'll be rolling out a one-stop shop within each zone. There will be a complete one-stop shop where you can get your work permits, where you can get your SARS certification, you get your DPI incentives and so on. But that's the concept about the one-stop shop, but we'll give more detail tomorrow. Honorable, Esther, I think you're correct that we've got, as you know, because the IDZs are mainly coastal, but as we could say, because of the nature of our economic development, it was mainly based on mining and the export of raw commodities, so therefore the coastal areas are being developed. As I said, our whole strategy is to shift away from the emphasis on reliance on coastal areas, and therefore, as I indicated, the biggest zone is probably going to be the one in Limpopo. If you look 10-15 years, because it opens up to the whole Southern African region, which they will be using as an export hub. So, I mean, that will be a major move inland and so on. I think on the question of the first 3 years, I think maybe let me explain properly. The first 3 years just refers to the, you know, when we start a zone going, like for example, when we started Saldanha going about 5 years ago, to get the ship going, you need to employ full-time people to start working on the feasibility study, to start setting up offices and so on. So they need what we call startup costs. So what we say, so that's what we're doing for all the new zones. We did it for Saldanha, we did it for Maluti Apopong, and so on. Then what we're saying is once they're then designated, once we get them to, so we cover them again for the first few years of just getting their designation going, doing the feasibility studies and so on. Then, once they've been designated, like Saldanha was 2 years ago, we then say we're going to only cover your operational expenses for another 3 years after that date. So that we allow the province to get into it, and as I said, and to then get to Honorable MacPherson's point is, as I said, this is a partnership. And as I said, these zones was not selected by DTI. These zones was identified by the provinces. Because as I said, the lesson of is that if you don't get the province 100% behind a zone, it will never ever work. Because you cannot run these things by remote control from Pretoria. So the province must budget for it. So what we're giving is we're giving a long period for the province to start building up its resources, to start making preparations for its budget. And then we said, so we take you through the feasibility study phase, we take you for 3 years, and then thereafter we said, but then it's only still, you're only fully responsible for operational costs, which is really salaries and then so on. We're still going to provide the infrastructure support. Obviously the province are also big players in the infrastructure support. They've budgeted massively for it as well. And many of it have on their books. Saldanha, Kucha, East London, the province carries those costs. So in any case, in some of the province, they're already carrying the operational costs. So Kucha, East London, Western Cape, they carry their operational costs, and they also carry the infrastructure costs. So we give the top up. Honorable Kuno, I think there is the timelines for the special economic or the investors, the pipeline and so on. I think, again, when I understand that we are very impatient to solve this. We've only reached 75% employment rate. We've got a 25% challenge. But I think that, as I said, industrial development, we have to just ensure that we start the journey and we have started it. But as I said, these things do take time. Investors take time to come in. But as I said, we're doing, by creating this one-stop shop, we're trying to expedite the process. And I think the example is clear, where, as you know, we secured the Dubai Trade Port. I think that whole IDZ application took less than 12 months. And then also we secured that Samsung investment in under 6 months, even 3 months. And so on. So we are, there's many others that we're working with. We are trying to improve the pace, but I do take it that there is a bit of frustration with the period. I think, Honorable Lewis, I think you're correct. I mean, but as I said, it's not us that cut our budget. We always are asking for more and more money. Luckily, we've been successful in many years, but this is the budget we get. But what Treasury has informed us is that they, because all of this money is really used for infrastructure in the IDZs and for tough structure, and as I said, for some of the current feasibility studies and so on, they've said that they're going to be increasing it in the two outer years. So because of the fiscal consolidation issue now, they've reduced our budget for SEZ, but we have still over 1 billion rand. And as I said, but it will be increased, and they will be increasing it in the two outer years. But as I said, that is a big effort. As you can see, we do have an ambitious program. We want to secure more and more funding for this. Honourable Mantaj, I think that you asked about the training for these ones. As I indicated, the problem is that, as I said, with those previous zones we had, or the previous industrial areas you had, in a sense, there was no sustainability. So as you can see, Alfred laid out, we're trying to create a full ecosystem. And therefore, training, we've already about 100 people we've sent to China, who, as you know, has got the most successful industrial development zone programs. So training is a very big part of the program, but also creating the ecosystem where you locate training facilities on board. I can mention here that we're in talks in Dubai Trade Port with a multinational Indian pharmaceutical company. And here we're seeing what we want. You see, really, they are not only going to be starting a world-class manufacturing plant in pharmaceuticals, but they're also going to create the ecosystem around it, the training. Because as you know, pharmaceuticals, and they are going to be doing things called biosimilars, which is sort of for cancer drugs and so on. They're creating an entire training program for PhDs and for the pharmaceutical sector. So as I said, a lot of we're also give funding. For example, in Saldana, we've given money for industrial training programs, so that when the ship, as I said, when the oil and gas sector does take off again, which is hopefully soon, then people can be trained to be able to work on those vessels, but they need proper training. So we've given them money now to train young people to start taking up those job opportunities. So it's both training of the people that will be working on the zones, but also the companies that will be able to draw on, that will be able to have the necessary skills to draw on. As I said, Honourable McPherson, as I said, we're working with all provinces. As I said, it's a partnership we have, so it's not for me to sort of extract things from the provinces. But as I said, these guidelines was developed with them, where we agreed what is the way of who covers what costs, how do we get these zones going, and as I indicated, we've worked with them to support them in their startup phase. We then agreed we will carry on operational for a few years, and then thereafter we will mainly focus on infrastructure and top structure. Let me also say why this thing is important is because prior to this, provinces used to only get directly the money straight from Treasury into infrastructure. So what happened is people were focusing more on the infrastructure and not on the investors. We are tying our SEZ program. We say that obviously we'll give you the money for the basic infrastructure, but after that you only get money if you show you've got an investor with it. and then we will pay for the top structure for that investment. So that creates an incentive for the province and for the zone to look at attracting new investors, because their funding then is not guaranteed. It's tied up to the investors. And that's why you see a lot of the turnaround is because we've tied the investment to the financing to investment and so on. But as I said, it's not perfect, but we're trying to create an operating model. But also the main reason why provinces must bear the cost of operations, because they are the ones, these companies belong to provinces. Kuha belongs to the Eastern Cape Development Corporation. Saldanha IDZ operating company belongs to Westgro. They are the only ones who can manage operational expenses. We can't see it from Pretoria. So it's important, because the provinces will manage it efficiently, they will ensure they get value for money, and that they don't just pay people salaries for doing nothing. And then to conclude, Honourable Shivambu, I think I can only but agree that we probably, I mean, the IPAP is now 6 years old. And as you say, we started the industrialization journey very late. As you know, before 2008-2009, we were mainly focused on financial services and mining, and relied on the mining boom to grow this economy. And even though it grew at impressive rates of sometimes 4-5%, we knew that when the bus came, the only countries that survive are those that are diversified. But I think we should have that discussion, and I would fully agree that South Korea is a perfect example from what we can learn from. But you must remember, with South Korea, when we developed the IPAP, we went there, they had one major advantage, which and that is that they had privileged access to the United States market. And also, what was very good for them is that they, unlike us, as you know, with AGOA, we only get the market access in exchange for allowing the chickens in. With South Korea, and because of the geopolitics, they allowed South Korea to be able to follow their own, to be protectionist, but also to be able to export. What is correct is that they are really a ideal model. I mean, as I said, the one plant we went to, which was in the nuclear industry, Hyundai Industries, they say when they built their first nuclear plant, they built it with Westinghouse, which is the U.S. company. The second plant they built themselves, and then created the company. And that is probably an example of how you should work with these multinationals, where you learn the technology, you learn by doing, and then you develop your own industrial phase. But I think to conclude is that, industrialization, to go start that path is a long journey. I think, and if you take even China, where they are today, it was in 1979 that they decided to undertake that journey. 50 years later, they are what they call now a reasonably prosperous society. As I said, our point is really that we have to just start this journey properly of getting onto that road of industrialization, and then hopefully the next 10 years will be much more promising when we look back on that. But I'll just ask Alfred and Sipo to just comment on the Richards Bay and the other ones.
If we can have that briefly, thank you, DG.
Thanks. For 10 years up to 2013-14, Richards Bay was going down. We only had two investors in that period. In the last 2 years, they've turned themselves around and made a huge leap. But obviously, that's not the end of that leap. It's more a stabilization period, and they're beginning to bring in the investments. So the only message we wanted the members of this committee to see is that even that IDZ, that should by now have died, has made huge strides to turn itself around and it's beginning to locate investments. And as you can see, the value of the investments that they are getting now, it's almost at the same level of East London, IDZ, and Kuha. So the message you have been bringing is just that, that there's a significant turnaround. There's still a long way to go for all South African zones, all of them. What we would want them to see is reduce unemployment in those areas significantly, but they are going down that journey very well. All of us accept that we have a lot of work to do. On the issue of incentives, we are in ongoing discussions with Treasury. What they really expect of us is to make the business case that it is worthwhile to keep the incentives that they have agreed to. So what we have at the moment is an agreement on the current arrangement that you have incentives for 10 years. In that period, demonstrate that these things work. And when they do, and taking into account any other strategic review on where we go with the industrialization agenda, we would then revisit the arrangement as to what new incentives package would be required. But for now, this is what we have. And the issue of the 90% rule, it may not be perfect, but the idea was that in the process of engaging with investors, there's a realization that there's a big danger that we are going to move people from Gauteng to Mpumalanga or from KZN to the other region. And let's come up with just with something that will help us to see that we can manage that thing better. And as we get better in ensuring that we can block just people crossing fences, and when the country gets nothing but spending more on incentives and investment, then we will revisit the current arrangements and improve them as we go on. So at the moment, our task is to test how they work and their impact, and then we'll come up with improvement strategies. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG, but also Chief Director, Mr. Tarr. I think that this is an important instrument and program, and I did see the Honourable MacPherson's hand earlier, Mr. Esterhazen's. I'd like these questions to be tabled for a response, if possible. I think we can look at an early response on the matter tomorrow, I'm sure. You ask yours.
It's a yes or no answer. I just wanted to know, is there binding agreements with the provinces or MOUs at least to say after the 3 years of operational cost, it is your responsibility? And do you know that they have in fact budgeted for after those 3 years? Because if it's just, well, we'll leave it up to you, you're going to hit a problem after those 3 years. So, I need to understand what the legal standing is between the DTI and the provinces.
That is a short question. Honourable Esterhazen.
Thank you, Chair. Excuse me. And also, provinces receive some sort of incentive, kind of in a grant or whatever, to get it going. And I was surprised to hear that Richard Bay's site is nothing but tall grass. The other places that's also been appointed and operational, maybe not operational, the budget allocation already to this, you know, how does it affect it? And then just on the labor that was mentioned, it happened also, to use mining again as an example, it happened in mining that people, mine owners go and pick up some malala pipes in Mozambique or wherever, and they bring them to a site. What percentage of the local people here, because people like this, foreigners, doesn't respect the traditional leaders that do not maybe on courses or the site. What percentage is of local labor must be used by the Thank you.
No, those are pretty short questions, I think. If the one is to do with agreements, MOUs, the other, what about the labour?
Yes, maybe I would ask to dispense with Honourable McPherson's. As I said, currently the provinces do already budget for the special economic zones. So we are as I said, Kuha, all of them are they already provided. What we are talking about here is, as you know, I mean, Honourable Yulewis, in terms of the DTI, that budget that we get nationally for all the SEZs, as I said, from that pot, we give money for you to start up, right? And then, as I said, once you've started up, we then also give we will also give you some support for operational expenditure for another 3 years, and so on. So there's no so as I said, there is clear agreements with the provinces because, as I said, they're already running it themselves. They already they've got budgeted both for infrastructure, for operations. Actually, they own these companies. So we're just talking about the national support, and I'm saying the formula in which we will be using in terms of allocating the money. So the question doesn't arise of whether they have budgeted for it or not. They're already budgeting for it.
Right. The other one about the labour issue. You know, is there any minimum that one would have to employ
of
the local population?
As I said, there's no legal minimum, but as I said, all of them are taking on are required to employ local labour. As I indicated, we're doing the training where we're training people from the local area so that the companies can take them up. So, but as I said, there's no legal, but as I said, how the aim is, the reason we're locating these SEZs there is to take on local labour. So, for example, as I explained about Atlantis, the reason we as part of their feasibility study, it shows how they can use local labour, skill them up, what training is required, and so on.
Yes, I think DG, it did say, if I recall that legislation, that as part of the criteria is the local economic development, including the employment of, I don't know if the word was local labour, but people there in the area. But I think it is something that if we can get just a little fleshed out response to, it would help. And that first question was the Honourable McPherson, on the agreement side, and then from Honourable Esterhazen. Now, apart from thanking the department and the team on that item, and also the members for active participation, we're going to have a comfort rather than a tea break. Bring your tea and eat in here, 5 minutes, please. It is just almost, it's gone 25 past. Let's try and start before 25, too. Thank you.
I want to know if you get the
All right. We've had our 5-minute break, and I think we can get back into it. Before I start, I just want to check with the political parties. Have you all sent in your any proposed recommendations? Because, you know, Mr. Herman says he doesn't have any, other than the one everyone seemed, supportive, and that was that there is a need for the model to be reviewed. You know, the company is at tribunal. Other than that one, we're not aware of any other proposed recommendation. I'm looking, the ANC, I already have it informally, that we'll wait till we get through the report. Honourable Esterhazen, yourself, the IFP? No, not yet. Right, Honourable Hill Lewis, the DA? Not yet. Honourable Shivambu, the EFF? Not at the moment. Right, let's start. We're going to go to the report number. Sorry?
What was the question about?
Sorry, it was on. The committee secretary would have asked parties to make their proposed recommendations, and he said he hadn't received any. So, it doesn't mean you can't do it now, but I'm just saying we haven't received anything. So let's just make a start, and that is page 1. Do you all have... Do you all have the new intro? Right. Now, let's go paragraph by paragraph as a start. We'll leave it to the staff to look at semantics unless there is something essential. Right. Page 1, intro, first paragraph.
Honorable
Mkongi.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I've read this introduction. It's poorly written. Very, very, very poorly written. And it does not reflect the quality of this committee in terms of introducing this particular report. And I feel that this should be rewritten. And if maybe the committee needs assistance, we can give that assistance. It's poorly written. I can go line by line in terms of what I'm doing.
Line by line. I wrote this morning. The point is taken. Right. It will mean that I have to review that. Right. Any other comments?
No.
Let's go on to 2. Substantively, is there something in or out? And the 3rd paragraph. The 3rd paragraph, I thought it would have been pertinent to put in the letter some of the key areas that we have had incentives targeted, and that was also leather, textiles, etc., and the amount of money in that. The other thing would have been, for this morning, just it was re-emphasized the role that SEZs and IDZs, obviously it has been done, I asked for it to go in, yes. All right, on that basis, let's go for what is substantive that you would like to see within the intro. Honourable Mkongi?
So not necessarily in the intro, but...
Well, that's what we're dealing with right now.
Oh, we're not dealing with... Because I thought we can say a productive and labor-intensive economy that creates not only unskilled and semi-skilled employment, but also skilled jobs. But when we finish black industrialism, the broad-based black economic empowerment should be there also, because it's one of the instruments that radically transform the economy.
Taken. We all happy? Right. Can we move from the intro? You know, what we've just got over here and move to the constitutional mandate. If there's anything you can think of later, please add it. Right? one, you would have had all this for some time then. Yes, not a hand. 1.2, 1.2 should be pretty straightforward. 1.3. All right, we're getting down on page 2 now. I understand it's your page 2 as well, where we're just before the second row of bullets. We come to the committee also consider the following entity's strategic and annual performance plan. It's just the process that was adopted. Number 2, budget vote 34. 2.2, the National Development Plan. And then we go from 2.1 to 2, hang on, 2.1, turn over, we've got a whole lot of bullets here. At the top of page 3, yes, Honorable Mkongi?
No, I just want to know, maybe in the report, do we have we referred to the National Development Plan in the report, in the initial? If we did not, I would like that the National Development, oh, yes, we do. Oh, okay. Because it was just abbreviation, so I thought we did not refer. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Now,
look, I'm
glad that we are paying attention to this. It's meant to be a committee report, so it's... notwithstanding that there are some parties who believe they may not support this budget in the end, the report is something you've attended and addressed. Therefore, this is like minutes. It's a reflection of the work you have done here. So if there's something that you believe is not reflecting this position, then you indicate it. But this is your report. And one needs to look at, you're not voting on the budget now. The DTI's program changed in that year. There are a couple of words I've asked to be changed, which we don't normally use, and that's animators. Let's just talk simple English. Say the same thing. We then go on to all the programs at the bottom of the page, page 3, before the graph. Did I see a hand? The split in former, the split. Or, you know, this is something I was wanting to ask this morning, the split. Do you mean the separation of departments? We wouldn't refer to that as a split per se. The division of the budget. Because I think the word split just has a kind of negative connotation to it. Let's say what we mean. Therefore, you now have 8 programs. They've been divided. You know, not split, as it were. Policy priorities are noted. Page 5. No hands so far. 2015 MTBPS, emphasized building infrastructure. You go on to your bullets, promoting manufacturing sector support and promoting investment. Promoting broad-based black economic empowerment. Promoting international trade. In addition to the strategic objectives, the department has identified a number of interventions to accelerate the achievement of the broader strategic objectives. The President X in this Nation of Address, Sona, State of Nation, 2 bullets at the bottom, Interministerial Committee on Investment Promotion, the launch of the Black Industrialists. Page 6. Yes, sorry, Honourable Mkongi.
Yeah,
which is page 5?
Page 5, yes. But the report is saying that in addition to the strategic objectives, the department has identified a number of interventions to accelerate the achievement of the broader strategic objectives. What are those interventions?
That's what they meant when they said as articulated below. But you could be right. Let's see. I read this. The President, in addition to the strategic, identified a number of interventions to accelerate. You're talking about the first sentence there. The President then did that, and his is articulated. The point is this, that in doing that, the train industry followed suit with the Black Industrialist Programme. It having been mentioned, in fact, it was mentioned before last year, Sona. Yes, can you come with a proposal?
Yeah, because this is a report of the DDI, not a report of the President. Mm-hmm. Now, what we've done, we said there are a number of interventions to accelerate the achievement of the broader strategic objectives. That is what the DDI has said, not the President. The President emphasizes that. So what are those interventions? That is what I'm talking about. Because one of the things that we've achieved this year is the establishment of the Broad-Based Trade Economy Commission. And that is one of the interventions, and it's not reported here. You see, so I'm raising that because of there are a number of them, and then we must raise them.
We hear the point you're making. You're saying make it clear this is what was done, but of course, in establishing this, the President would have established the interministerial, not the, as I understand it, the department. So I think it may be a matter of rewording that. In addition to the strategic objectives, identified a number of interventions to accelerate that, which the President underlined in the 22nd SONA, and then let's just move with it, huh? Okay. Now the point. Right. The One Stop Shop in Invest South Africa initiative. The 2016-2017 budget. You go into that. I was informed by the committee secretary, Mr. Hermans, that this has been cut. The whole report has been cut. It may appear to be, and it does, it is the same number of pages, but that's because of the formatting they've been instructed to adopt, the spacing. So it is shorter in number of words, but not in pages. Is this correct? Because it was far too long before. You then go for this budget increased from 9.5 billion there to 10.3 and another increase of, an increase of 829.7 million in real terms. Therefore, the DTI's budget will increase by 2%. It's going to increase. But that is just this immediate budget we are in, as one understands, for this financial year ending in March 2017. The comment made here, which I expect would be important for you to look at, given the inflation estimates of 6.2 and 5.9 for the next 2 years respectively, the budget is expected to increase to 9.7 and decline to 8.2 in 2017-2018 in real terms. And that is the impact of the inflation there. Yes, anyone else? Honourable Mkongi?
Yeah, I think maybe they are covering me, the report here. Because I wanted to know, in nominal and real terms, what is the impact of this budget? And what is our take in terms of that? Because if the report is going to be dealing with nominal terms, it's going to be confusing. So in real terms, what is the reflection of the budget? And what is our input on that, whether we are happy or we are not happy, what are we saying to the treasurer going forward? Because Honourable Shivambu made a very fundamental contribution, is that our aim was to create jobs in this manner. And is this budget going to make us to create those number of jobs?
Thank you very much. I think the impact of the inflation is noted there in the table below with the nominal. It is quite clear that we are going to drop nominal and real in the following year. The middle, the moment, the second year of the MTE, as one understands. And even in the third year, this is expected. I'm just looking at the DG. It is expected to do a further decline in real terms. Is that correct? For the 3 year, not the first year we're in now, we've gone up. But in real terms, in the outer years.
Yes, I think it's correct. The budget would be declining. I think I want to re-emphasize the point. The amount of interest we're getting now from investors and all our incentive packages, from autos to MSEB to film to many of the times, we are now finding for the first time that the amount of applications exceed the amount of money we have. So so we are actually reaching a point where it is correct, we are getting the pipeline going. And now we don't have enough money for the incentives and for the program. So I think really, if we do say that we are on if our focus is going to shift to industrialization and also to the new second economy areas, then I think there needs to actually be an increase in investment. Because the one advantage of the DDI budget, as you can say, is they all go directly either into let's say 85% of the budget goes directly either into infrastructure or into a partnership, a co-investment with the private sector to create jobs.
All right. We have a follow-up. Yes, Honourable Mkongi.
Yes, this is what I wanted, that the report should capture. It should capture our attitude in terms of the declining effect of the budget for the DDI and our concern for that. Because if there's a continued decline in real terms of the budget, then that simply means we're not going to achieve our strategic goals of creating more jobs as we planned. That must be an issue. The second question that we must answer, Chairperson, is the sustainability of these incentives. Are they sustainable in terms of broadening participation and making sure that we are transforming the economy in reality? So these are the issues that, as we go along, we need to tackle them and see whether they are also sustainable and so forth. Thank you.
Right. Have we captured some of that? So, just a minute. Yes, I think in terms of this, we may wish to look at, I wasn't here last week myself, but you may wish to discuss with the spokesperson of, if you like, the ANC, the whip, whether we should be perhaps noting these as some of the conclusions. That's one possibility, not a recommendation, but indicating, yes, these issues, the real, the way I saw it, we knew there would be a decline in the budget. That we all knew. As a matter of fact, there isn't one this year, fair enough. There's a marginal increase. But the question one needs to ask is, can we do more with less? And in many instances, that has been the case. Not in all. Yes, we noted your apology late, Honourable, So, I don't want to go into nitty-gritties of where this should be. I mean, the question has to be, it is going to be cut in the outer year. That being the case, have we got measures in place to still achieve the goal of creating jobs? I think the DG has me there.
Is that your concern?
Well, I think, as I said, we are cutting costs, and we, for example, there's a complete freeze on any new posts, new vacancies. We are also going to be reducing over time in terms of our, we've completely cut out any extras, catering, outside venues, and travel. It's been kept to the bare minimum and so on. But so I think we can live within our budget for those areas, and we are planning to do that. But as I said, 85% of our budget goes straight from the department into infrastructure or into private investment. That part is that you cannot, if you don't increase that, you are going to get a lower return. Because as I said, companies, if you just take the Ford investment that happened a few weeks ago, there's 1,200 jobs created in Silverton next to Mamelodi. Now that investment, we have to give a 20% investment allowance for that. If we didn't, we had to give this commitment about 3 years ago. We promised Ford, please make the investment, build, and then you build your engine plant, do that, and so on. But we had to give the undertaking 2 years ago. But as I said, otherwise they won't make the investment because they can get much better incentives or they can get attractive packages elsewhere. So, as I said, unless you have the money, you're not going to get those investments. And that's why we're saying, if we want to upscale and start eating into the 25% unemployment rate, we must increase the amount of money we make available. As I said, we face a very important opportunity because over the years we've built our capabilities. I mean, I don't know if you saw the story about the film industry. They say now we are second to Los Angeles in terms of the skills that we've built for the film industry. And in autos, I say about Hisense and so on, we are probably to come now, but now we must have the incentives available for them. Yeah.
Right. I want to move from this point. Yes, Honourable Mkongi.
This is a case of saying that we must make, you know, what DG said, that they continued, decline in the budget of the DDI is not going to help us to achieve our stated goals of reducing the unemployment rate in the country. This is what we're trying to make a case. So we're making a case to the Treasury that they must look carefully at the continued decrease in the budget of the GTI in line with our stated objectives.
Right. Now, this may well be, but let me allow Honourable Kalako to come in.
Yeah, Chair, I thought in those areas which Honorable Kong is raising are areas which we should put in our conclusions and recommendations. And my understanding, this is our report to Parliament about our overseeing work with the department. It's neither a department's or report or it's ours. So I thought, what is contained here, I've gone through this, what is contained here reflects what throughout the financial year has been presented to us and was discussed it with the department and with units of the department. So to me, I think what will be important is to, I thought when you go page by page, because there's nothing new really here. There's nothing that we do not know, we have never discussed with the department. So I thought our focus will be on our own recommendations and conclusions. Because going page by page is areas and issues which were really discussed. We have called these units of the department to appear before us. We have engaged with them. So these issues are not new. So to me, I think what we can do is to put forward our conclusions, summarize our work and recommendations to her.
Perhaps we can ask you, Honourable Mkongi, just to craft that for the conclusion, all right? And we can look at it when we come to conclusions. Right, budget allocations, you see that, am I right? Did we get there? No. Right, the bottom of page 6, just an explanation, the budget allocation by program. Right? Right, the 3.2.1. We are going just in terms of this, you were all there, you need to know if this is a true reflection of what happened there in the committee. Right, page 8, 1.7% at the top is the continuation there of the budget of these three programs increase, these include, and it notes them. Program 1, administration. Program 2, international trade and economic development. Page 9. And then you go to Program 3, 3.2.4, the SEZ, economic transformation. We've just been dealing with that. Page 9. Page 10, Program 4, Industrial Development. When I looked at this report, it was one of them, and I looked at the work we had received regarding that in the notes, in fact, the minutes. The reference to industrial development had shifted to high value. Now, I'm not sure just when that came in, but there were in two or three reports the phrase of high value, which was a shift in statement from previous budgets. And I think that needs to come in where it was said. The program's budget will decrease from that in 2015-16 to that. 17% in real terms. Program 5, Consumer and Corporate Regulation. 11, the Regulatory Services sub-program remains the largest of the three sub-programs in terms of budget allocation, as it is responsible, and it indicates the different things it is responsible for, importantly, and the overall decline and the program's budget is the comparatively large budget of the regulatory services sub-program falling by 2.1% in real terms, while the smaller budgets of policy and legislative development, enforcement, etc. increased. Now, that there was an explanation sought on that, and also you need to, if there is a need for a conclusion, a statement in that regard to note it. In line with the previous requests, the regulatory entities' budgets increased. Well, you've already noted the one on the company's tribunal, haven't you, for recommendations. 3.2.7, Program 6, the Incentive Development one. That's page 11. Page 12. Then 3.2.8, Program 7, Trade Exports South Africa. 3.2.9, Program 8, Investment South Africa. Look here. Yes, well there it is, the announcement made by President Zuma, but the mandate of the department, it falls under DTI to actually flesh it out, all right? Page 13. 2.4, key issues raised by the committee during its deliberations. impacts of industrial parks, risks that impede the beneficiation drive of the government. It goes on and on, the rationale for the decline in the investment leveraging targets over the medium-term expenditure program and its relation to attracting future investment. That is given a, it's spelt out there very clearly, and I think our oversight helped. The impact of the Investment Act on future investment. The investment pipeline. Status of one-stop shop. The film incentives and links to specialized skills rather than unskilled labor. I think that's a growing industry, and hopefully we've noted that further on. The need for a strategic shift on page 16 by DTI's focus on job creation. The verification process. Now we are busy, you know, on that at the moment, yes. And then entities reporting to the Minister of Trade and Industry. Company tribunals. 3.1.1, strategic goals of the company's tribunal. Annual performance plan, adjudication program. Just talking about that, did we get the responses from the company's tribunal to all the questions that were raised during the engagement? Now I'm just asking. Table 4, the adjudication, the administration. Page 19, the medium-term budget analysis. See, there's also these other points, just for your benefit as well, Honourable and Congi, where these two are compared, you know, directly. So this is why I say we may just decide where we want to put our comments, but I think conclusion remains the best. Expenditure. A lot has been said about the alternative dispute resolution, which I see you've got in the conclusion. Page 20. Have you had a hand on? Yes, Honourable Shivambu.
Thanks, Chair. I don't know when we should raise maybe some more substantial issues in terms of all the agreement with the whole budget principles. And the principles that that underpin the consideration of the cities. We can deal with that later on. Mm-hmm. My worry is that I have to leave possibly my 12:30 to go and deal with other issues.
Well, look, we don't have too much left for us to take in principles adoption. And as I see it, the way we're going, we're going to do this in 10 minutes.
Okay.
So. But be prepared for with your statement, all right, in the comments, as we reach this. Medium-term budget analysis, income and expenditure, page 20. You've then got it spelt out. Key issues by the committee during the deliberation in this area, which goes on to 21. You get the breakdown of the chairperson's earnings, which was asked for, which quite clearly we got that information. The fees, maximum values, page 22. The National Consumer Tribunal. Established, what are we doing there? The strategic goals thereof. 23. Just matrix the same thing, annual performance. The adjudication program performance, page 24. Administration program performance plan. The medium-term budget analysis in this area. And then, you know, they're looking at this additional grant funding is expected to be 1.6 million in the financial year. NCT, but still I know they were under pressure. 26, page 26, the key issues raised there, and I think a lot of this had to do with the, what is it, the non-DRA matters, let me see there, Oh, I mean, if you do, then what is it? What? Dental. Debt. Let's just mention it again, because I think some of us may have forgotten that it means debt. You know, rearrangement agreement. Let's just mention that again. Spell it out. The NCT's funding model. I see we're looking at all the funding models, which is constructors, the disbursement of performance bonuses. And I see we tackled that under the Consumer Tribunal as well, or the companies, was it? NCT. Page 27, or 29 rather, the National Gambling Board. We noted they've got the policy, the strategic goals, goes on matrixing that on SETI, the compliance program, page 31, the liaison and advisory services, which was interrogated quite a lot, and then the corporate services on page 32. And then again, that analysis. The National Central Electronic Monitoring System. This increase is as a result of expected changes in the funding model again. So clearly this is something that needs to be monitored in the year 34. Well, you've got the program, the economic classification, and key issues. The illegal gambling, the licensed operations, potential conflict of interest. Chair, the ability of the NGB to fulfill its mandate. Staff complement. Status of the NCEMs. What is the status here? And then you move to conclusions. Can we just look at these conclusions and ask members? I'm going to read 1, 2, 3, and then you're going to tell me if you're happy. These are your conclusions. 1, the uncertainty, current economic environment. 2, the committee is encouraged by the continued investment, agro-processing, auto manufacturing. I wondered if leather should have been there, seen as we did, that did come up, and they've had a lot. Because I understand that a fair amount of funds were put in that direction. Is that not correct, DG? And the leather?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, and it is something that is growing with jobs, right? 3, the one-stop shop issue. 4, the initiatives already implemented, and but they need to improve corporate governance. Some challenges remain. What are they? Not reaching performance targets. They remain a concern. The compliance issues, but the proactive approach by DTI to ensure compliance was welcomed. 5, the ADR, the mechanisms. Please spell out CT again in 4, just to remind people what it is. A major concern for the committee under 6 is the cost associated with the court process, hence the support for the ADR. 7, the current budget constraints. They do have a funding challenge, a serious one, which you referred to. 8, the National Consumer Tribunal. The issue raised here, the committee welcomes the measures to implement the existing backlog and anticipate increased applications. A major concern for the committee was the National Gambling Board to fulfill its enforcement mandate. And then the committee welcomed the completion of the policy process with respect to gambling and would encourage the TIMIA submission of the amendment bill. I'm going to come right back to that, but I want to know, we're happy with acknowledgement, that's just a thank you to people and the recommendations. Coming to conclusions again, I'd like to hear, I am coming to yourself, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Shabambu, do you want to raise the issues now at this particular point, please?
I think I highlighted that in the earlier comment we made when we discussed the LGC. I have
fundamental
at the table, we just missed the point on it all.
Yeah, I've got a problem with the principles that underpin the DTI budget, particularly spending a lot of money on incentives. Well, it is 67% here in the current framework that 67% of incentive programs, administration and incentive is, and about 17% on industrial development or something like that. I'm not yet convinced that the incentives in the manner in which they are structured now is a way to fulfill the mandate of the Department of Trade and Industry. I think that they can be far much better approach in terms of how this is dealt with. The suggestion I made earlier that we need to have a far much more substantial discussion and identify the sectors which we think are labor absorptive. Yes. Which are labor absorptive, and instead of throwing money into corporations that do not create jobs, and if they have the SZ, they pay 15% tax, they possibly get lots of other tax incentives as well that come with it. So, and possibly even avoid taxes because they are multinational companies. I think we might be making a loss actually by just throwing money into some of these corporations and the underpaid workers, and I think that there must be a strategic review of that. And then the other issue is, even, I don't know the extent of the department's support of agro-processing, which sectors, what exactly has been supported. But I think that the approach towards agriculture should be to subsidize the entire food economy chain, instead of focusing on agro-processing, because agro-processing is not labor-absorptive. To compile thousands of milk products, they require very few people. It needs very few to make cheese. It requires very few people. Most of the processing industries, it's not a labor absorptive sector, and I think the job component should be what drives the kind of budgeting and interventions that drives the Department of Trade and Industry. Because, like, what could be the justification that it's only agro-processing? I don't know. Like, we must start from the beginning in terms of what. That is why, overall, Jay, lastly, overall, there must be an integrated industrial policy approach that looks into all the departments, not just on issues that relate to the industry, that relates to agriculture, that relates to science and technology, because the technology is building pharmaceutical now, that relates to all these other sectors. There must be a coordinated and centrally funded industrial policy plan so that the some clarity of which direction we're taking. I think in the manner in which it's structured now, is problematic and will not have any effect. I think we're going to be in the same state. If we're going to continue in this format, I think we'll be in the same state in the next 20 years. There will be change obviously when we take power later on, but if we were to continue in this pace, there won't be any changes.
View of your first statement on the current structuring of incentives. Remember, that was the first point. I wonder if in our conclusion, I'm just going to make a proposal, there's a lot more that just needs to come in here. If we talk about that, we would appeal or want the review of the current structuring of incentives more in line with the sector-specific approach, which has been adopted. Haven't you adopted that, the GE sector-specific? That is it possible to review this current structuring so that we get a much more traction from the incentive something. I'm just checking with you, DG, because I know you've got Sector Pacific already. And then I'm going to come back.
I would support the proposal from Honorable Shubambu that we say there should be a focus on labor intensive sectors like agriculture and agro-processing, and that we also tie, as said, the agro-processing incentives to incentives also for the agricultural sector and so on. If I could report, for example, under the Manufacturing Competitiveness Program, MCEP, the bulk of that, in the biggest beneficiaries of that was agro-processing. So it is going there. As you can see, when agro-processing is very successful, is that because it has backward linkages into agriculture. So it is very important to support agro-processing, because you remember, you cannot just export the raw agricultural product. It needs to be packaged properly. There needs to be a lot of work done to that. So, but the two, I think we obviously, because we still think about the colonial structure of our economy, where we see as mining and manufacturing, mining and agriculture as separate from manufacturing. It is actually just one chain. You take your raw mining equipment and your raw agricultural products, you add value to it, which is called manufacturing. So they're all three together. So you must actually support all of those. That's why we talk about productive sectors of our economy. But I would say that Honorable Chair, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about incentives. For example, the tax incentives. There's been no tax incentives given to the IDZs. It's only coming into effect this year. So it's not that these people have been abusing tax incentives. There was nothing to abuse, you see. So I would say what we should say is that we need actually additional support for our incentive programs. It is too little at the moment. If we want to play small, we could continue trying to just get more out of this little we have. The point is to upscale it, to upscale the incentives, and then we will be able to upscale the industrial sector. So it's all about scale. We are still small scale in terms of our support.
But I thought I heard you before. I take in two points here. I'm going to ask Honourable Shivambi to come last, because he's raised it to start with. It was Honourable MacPherson, then Honourable Nkongi. But as I understand it, we may be moving along the lines of talking about the focus, as it were, needs to be more sector specific. And that there is a real need to upscale the funding in this direction. That's where we are at the moment, not having passed this. Right. Honourable MacPherson, were you on
that? Yeah. Just some clarity, DG. As far as I understand, with our incentive regime, that is linked to actual job creation proposals that have to be linked to those applications. We don't just say, here's R1 million, hope you do well. There's actually targets that they have to be met. So, I think that that's really important that we keep that. I think where possible, we need to obviously look to try and push up those numbers. But that's obviously related to the amount of funding that can be given to us from Treasury. The critical thing, DG, is to obviously ensure that those numbers are realized, because if the investment's being made and we're not getting the return on jobs, that's where I have the problem. But I'm sufficiently happy that those targets are equitable to the investments.
Thank you, Honourable MacPherson. Honourable Nkongi.
Honourable Shivambu is provoking a very, very important debate in South Africa, and number of people, they are running away from this debate. Whether the whole government machinery in the Republic of South Africa supports industrialization is a problem. It's fundamental. And maybe I must invite him to come to the conference of the ANC next year, because this thing should be discussed. Because next year. Yes, yes, because the discussion that is raising is fundamental, that we need to enter, to encourage it within our own, maybe. Because I want us to interrogate the aims and objectives of the South African Monetary and Fiscal Policy, whether it talks to industrialization, whether the instruments that are being used by the South African Reserve Bank assist us in the process of industrialization, which I don't think so. So this debate needs to be broadened, and we need to take it head on, because if all the policies that are supposed to support industrialization do not talk about industrialization, DTI is going to fail. And these 5 years that we promised 400 job opportunities is not going to take place under a stifled economic regime, our fiscal and monetary policy. So I think maybe we need to take it to maybe to the conference next year. Thank you.
Well, at the moment, we're not in the aim.
We're in a committee meeting, and of course, any ruling party in the government will want to do it exactly that way. Yes, Honourable Shivambu.
Thanks. Look, you know, I'm not sure if VTI is paying attention to the discourse around the incentives and the opposition to the incentive program. There was a Christmas fall protest. The Secretary General of the AAC said, why are we wasting money giving to these automobile companies? It's a waste of money. We can just take those billions and fund education instead of. That is what he said. And I can tell you that I sit in the Standing Committee on Finance. If you change in the last 2 meetings, there was a discussion about the incentive and then. A very strong feeling, you know, the minister was there, that the incentives was withdrawn. And that was being said to the Minister of Finance. So the discourse, I don't think you're doing a very good job in explaining the linkages between their incentive programs and the developmental impact that are coming. I'm still not yet convinced that we need the. But this is why that is what I'm objecting on, to say that I'm not convinced that. But also, it looks like these incentives are unconditional. Because when we went to Toyota, there are lots of things which are basic, like in terms of the suppliers, and they just go and source even the most basic of things outside. But they receive a lot of incentives from trade and industry. So it looks like these incentives as well, when they're given, they're not conditional. Even if you do not comply to some of the things, let's say those conditions, there is no penalty. I think that is there must be a strategic review of that. And I'm not seeing in this budget vote the last issue, because in the 2015 budget vote, he said we must allocate 1 billion rand. We must reinforce 1 billion rand for black industrialists. Even identify sectors which these black industrialists are going to be created. And there was a specific number. He said they're going to create 100 black industrialists. Cannot be given their names and the addresses and the companies that they are involved in, so that we can visit their industries as well. So because we did indicate that. It looks like you're rushing this thing in terms of how it's conceptualized first and how it was dealt with. So I think we might need some sense of accountability before we agree on anything moving forward.
All right. Look, I think what we can ask, Honourable Shivambu, we've got something up here. If you add something there that we can look at, which I see Honourable Albert has done for us, and the other thing you focused on was the greater coordination, and I think that we have got some reference to that. We need to, you know, pull it out again, because it is something I think the Ministry itself has called for, that there is a need for this greater coordination. Yes, Honourable Shivambu, I have seen your hand.
Yes, that is the last issue, actually. Like, the most important thing is the whole coordination, not only of government,
departments, even of important institutions like the PIC. The PIC expends a lot of money investing in existing companies, and they control, they have 17% of MTN, they've got, I think, 11% of Vodacom, they've got a stake in PNP, they've got a stake in Shoprite, almost everywhere else. They participate in the owners of shelf spaces. And therefore, they've got the right to say through the GEPF and to say that our investments must be accompanied by localization and this and this. I don't think there is a nationwide coordination of industrial program in South Africa. And to leave it to DTI evidently illustrates that it won't have the impact that is required, because also there is no money in terms of what is needed to deal with all those. So if all these resources can be assembled in one basket and strategically deployed, they could have much more maximum impact, because lastly, to say you're going to fund the new industry, black industrialism, 100 million is a joke. I don't know which plant costs 100 million, which is significant. Basic plant, a small plant to which can sustain industry for a very long time for 100 million rand. I don't know where that is.
But I think the point you're making is that there was a commitment. We need to know where it is and where it's all coming. We're going to be the last comment, Honourable Nkongi. Honourable McPherson.
Thanks, Chief. I just wanted to see if it would be possible to put somewhere in the conclusions the issue over steel and tariffs and continued increases. It is something that we've spoken about. I think, you know, the Honourable Nkongi, you know, said that, you know, we need to have a discussion about it. I agree with him. I suspect that we may disagree on the outcomes of that. But I think that it's something that we need to recognize, that what is continuing in the South African market is not sustainable and is going to be a bigger problem if we don't act quite sooner. And I think that we need to recognize that in the conclusion somewhere.
Well, I tell you what my concern is right now, and I think we would all have it. I don't think anyone sitting here disagrees with the principle, fine. But the issue is now, I was not there for every presentation and engagement, and I'm looking at Honourable Kalako. I know that the issue of steel was raised at one point, and it was reaffirmed that there is the interministerial and there is this group working. What was it on? Just remind me, DG. There is some iron and steel task team. Why am I saying that? So to put something in the conclusion, do you hear me, the technicality, it needs to also have been a reference in the body. Do you follow what I'm saying? So we're not saying no, but we're saying we need to do that. All right. So that's what we will do, because all that has happened in terms of this budget is that there is the agreement, we have heard this, and that we have taken a decision that we need to take this further. That has happened. Yes, Honourable Nkongi.
Chairperson, you know, there are a number of things and proposals that we have made in this committee. For example, we had a colloquium.
Yes.
And one of the conclusions of that colloquium was to lobby cabinet and the president to establish an interministerial committee on industrialization. It was a proposal that we added, because it was talking to a number of issues that Honorable Shivambo is raising. So I'm not sure whether we're still holding that, because we have a question of the iron and steel task team. And if we talk about industrialization, the question of iron and steel is fundamental. So now, why is it separate from the broader perspective of industrialization in the country, for an example? So I'm not sure whether we've made that recommendation officially of the establishment of the interministerial committee on industrialization. So this is what I'm trying to
write. Right. Now we have, and they've done it. But the point is, yes, they've done it, but we're still having challenges. That's where we are as we sit here. And this is where we need to just do that follow-up to know it remains on the radar screen. That is all. Honourable Shivambu, let's come to a close now. Yes?
Yeah, I think that's not one of the recommendations is what Congress is saying. An interministerial committee on industrial expansion and the but with the administrative backup, either maybe an institute on industrialization, something much more structured which will focus much deeper and coordinate all industrial programs across all departments in terms of that, but also involves other entities. That could play
involving other entities as well. Which
that could employ, that can play a far much more meaningful role in terms of what should happen. Because in a disjointed form, it's not going anywhere.
I know that everyone has got other commitments, and I just want to ask you, Honourable Shivambu, I think we do hear what you're saying, but I'm looking at those who have also made references to it. Honourable McPherson, Honourable Mkongi, the committee itself in a previous report. So can we agree that it is important, we note the establishment of the Interministerial Task Force in this regard, I think it was on the pricing, but that given the strategic nature of iron ore, whatever, it really is imperative that the processes are expedited so that this can be urgently resolved so that we can begin to contribute more effectively or even more effectively to the manufacturing and productive. It's been there before. The department pushed, so we did lobby. We got that team. So all we're saying now, it was established last year sometime, if I'm not mistaken, I think, PG. That team, when was it established?
Four or five years ago. Yeah. I don't know if there's maybe two issues, Honourable Chair, we're talking about. The one is, I think, that industrialization cannot just be about DTI. There's a need for a inter-ministerial government on industrialization, which is so that we can, as I said, overcome that. The iron and steel, as I said, that team, and we can have a fuller discussion on the steel industry, and I would support Honourable Mkongi. The problem is there's a global crisis in the steel industry of oversupply, and they're closing down, they're nationalizing the steel industry in the UK. The US has put tariffs even now, anti-dumping against South Africa for steel. There's a global problem, so I think let's have more. And 2 weeks ago, we met with a global CEO of Mittal who came down. Our domestic industry is in crisis. We're working together to try to save the industry, but we can give reports on those things. But I think I would suggest we not deal with that old steel pricing committee dealt with the problem when the steel price was high, and Mittal was abusing its monopoly power. The problem is that phase is over now. Steel prices is down in the gutter. It is low. We've got a different problem at the moment, which is oversupply and a lack of demand, which is the real problem now. It's a big problem here.
Let's talk about the global challenges facing this commodity. We need to, it's broad, but within our own country, we need to find ways of addressing it. It's not just pricing per se. Are you talking on this particular one, Honourable McPherson?
I would be concerned that we would then start to move into a different direction. Because, I mean, the truth of the matter is that tariffs have been imposed on steel in South Africa. You know, the agreement was that if we put those tariffs up, that there would be no price increases. There's been three this year. And the latest press statement from AMSA says, well, that's because, of international prices of steel. But they are mining the iron ore in South Africa. The international price of steel has got nothing to do with their prices that they charge local customers. Yet they've put up their prices 30% this year. That is the discussion. is the local economy and local steel fabricators and customers at the end of the day that suffer. And they're getting it on both sides. They're getting tariff protection and they're increasing their prices by 30% to the detriment of South Africa. That is the discussion that we need to have, and that's what the report needs to be able to know.
You can see Ms. Herling is doing that. I just want to move though to yourself, Honourable Albert. You've made an addition on page 35, number one, conclusion number one, where the Freedom Fund said that what that value for money is achieved without affecting economic growth. I'm just looking at the committee. That's an addition there. And that the decline, number four, is this number four? After three, this is critical to opportunities for South Africa. The decline in the investment targets need to be monitored and interventions, and interventions made, performed as necessary, undertaken. Please put your hand up if you're having problems with these. Well, I'm reading them to you. There they are coming up. You've got it. You've got it.
Are we discussing the conclusions or
we are discussing the conclusions, and as I said, Honourable Albert wasn't here when we started. He's brought them in. So we need to just look at that. Honourable Shivambu?
Look, I think we've raised the principle of issues that obviously cannot be resolved immediately, but we'll raise it even when we debate. But I think the genuine issue that must be raised, which maybe the department must build capacity on immediately, is to enforce laws. Like if you have got agreement on increase of prices by metal steel and then they defy you, what do you do? You don't do anything. Everyone else is just going to defy you. If this competition commission ruling that a certain localizations must happen like this, and then they don't do it, like you allow Walmart stores to come to South Africa with certain agreement, they're not complying to that. What do you do? Now I saw there's an agreement or the excitement that InBev is coming. They make lots of promises, localize, will do this, will give jobs to South Africans, and they don't do it. What are you going to do about it? So there must be some sense of direction. If it requires legislation, maybe we should agree in principle that it must be enacted in that regard, so that businesses do not exist in a lawless environment. The failure to give a developmental direction is the inability of the state to enforce laws on businesses. And that is what distinguishes industrial policy in South Africa and what happened in South Korea.
Uh-huh. Well, look, what we're going to do here, because I see the minister in some of the inputs that have been made has indicated that this is going to be tackled very seriously with the full might of the law. But apart from that, I think the point that has just been made, that the committee does need to review and revisit areas of legislation where there are weaknesses. We need to assist the department in that respect to ensure that the legislation we have provided enables them to achieve the compliance and enforce the measures. Yes, Aditi?
As I said, maybe I think the point about it's important to the mention of the steel industry, and also that we need to tackle all the problems of the steel industry. As you know, we've been on a 10-year campaign against Mittal about import parity pricing.
Yeah.
So I think all I was saying is that we must also discuss the future of creating a viable steel industry in the country. I think before coming to legislation, firstly, no country has a law which can regulate the prices which private sector charges. That's the heart of what a mixed economy is. The state does not set prices. So I don't think it's a question of non-implementation of laws. As I said, if we so no other country has prices for laws. What you do is you use your instruments to influence private sector behavior. Now, as I said, in South Korea, the reason they could control the price of steel is because they owned the steel country. Just like in South Africa, when ISCO was there, they sold cheap steel. It was because when Mittal took over that they abused all the privileges which ISCO had as a state-owned company. And they, as I said, they billions flowed out of the country. And so on. But as I said, unfortunately, the current situation is now where jobs are at stake. Evras is closed down. Vanderbijl Park could be closed down. So I'm saying we must just keep our debates relevant to the current circumstances. Now, we can debate the issue of 10 years ago, and I agree we must do it, but we must also look at the current reality, which is we must save the steel industry in the country. That's all I'm saying. It's not a question of non-implementation. The steel industry is a global problem. Port Talbot is closing down in the UK. The UK's national parliament is going back to the 1950s to say the state must take over again the steel industry. So all I'm just saying is let us also have that debate about where we are with steel and so on.
I'm going to take Honourable Shibangu, Honourable Nkongi, and close this because I want to finalise the recommendation issue.
Yeah, I think an opportunity is arising now objectively, not even for ideological purposes, to argue for state ownership and control of the steel sector. Like, that is one issue that we must speak about openly without having it's called still there, the special funds have got a component of it under its control, and I think that is one direction that must be taken, and everything is basic superior logic that must be adhered to.
Thank you, Honourable Shibangu, Honourable Nkongi, last point.
Yeah, no, that is what I wanted to raise, that we must not close down this debate because it is a necessary debate whether our state can control prices. Generally, in other countries, they are controlling prices, they are participating directly in the economy. And that is a contested ideological issue that South Africa should enter. And seemingly, we are afraid of entering that space. Because one of our resolutions is to target the strategic sectors of the economy and how we control target of sector if the state is having a hand. So we need to think broadly about these particular things. And this is providing us an opportunity, the matter of state, to reopen the discussion and make sure that we deal with these matters. But I wanted to contribute, Chairperson, on the conclusions, because you said I must write something and I've finished
yes.
Writing.
Well, we want to move in from there, so please read it out.
Oh, okay. All the matter that I've raised was the issue of the budgeting of the DTI. I said the committee has observed.
Read your carbon, because you see, I wanted Honourable Shibangu to be here when we adopted this report, so that it noted what the position is. So let's just.
We would not agree.
Let's have that while you're sitting here, Honourable Shibangu.
Yeah, I will believe in the words must prepare for the budget votes. Yeah. The. We don't agree with the budget was in this country, and we did underline the principal issues that makes us object, and we'll give the context to not be too much.
Thank you, Honourable Shibangu. Right, continue, Honourable Nkongi.
Yes, the committee has observed with interest the continued decline in the budget allocation for the DTI, especially for outer years 2017-2018. So the committee is of the considered view that the continued decline in the budget of the DTI allocation will have a negative impact on our national goals of creating work and fighting poverty. The committee would like to recommend, maybe that one is a recommendation, I will read it in the recommendation.
I was just wanting to clarify this. I understood the budget had gone up this financial year, so it's not continued decline. but that the decline in the two outer years, not the continued, you know, we must just be careful on the points. Okay, all right. Now, we want to conclude on the conclusions, all right? Now we're coming to recommendations, and the recommendations, we do not want a list of recommendations. We have one here from Honorable Albert, apart from the one you've already seen. With regard to local investment and the protection of local industries and jobs, the effects of the tariff placed on that must be monitored and lawfully adjusted upwards within. But we've got that in the conclusion, you see. The other one, which is, wait a minute, is something to do with the external stuff. The Investment Act on Foreign Direct Investment and proposed amendments to ameliorate. This is a recommendation. But that is still conclusion. Oh, is that what has happened? The NCT must make sure it's... Right, so could you speak to this, Honorable Albert?
Chair, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. I apologize for being late due to some flight delays. Right, so would you like me to speak to every...
Yes, I'd like you in first instance to speak to your recommendations, of which I understand you've discussed with the committee secretary and you are happy that they go to conclusions. So I need to hear that from you, not from him.
Yes, Madam Chair, it's fine to go to conclusions as long as there's certainty that the minister will have will take cognizance of it, quite serious cognizance. These matters that I raise here has been dealt with by the committee in the recent months, in this year, and some of the matters I have raised as well, and they are, all of them are linked to subject matter in the report itself, save for the matter on the steel. I've been told.
I want to check with the DA as well about any comments they need. So we're just coming to the end now. Well, can you say that on mic? You know, I've done the same to everyone.
We're covered.
You're covered. Right, thank you. Honourable Albert, continue, please.
Yes, I've been told that I've made a specific reference to steel and tariffs placed on it. And I've been told by the secretary that steel has not been referenced specifically in the report.
We did deal with that, though, remember, that we are raising it in there.
Yes, exactly. So that might stay as it is, depending on what comments we receive. So I can deal with them with you now, point by point, from point one. And I'll just read them aloud. Right, point one, with regard to local investment and the protection of local industries and jobs, the effect of tariffs imposed on imported steel must be monitored and lawfully adjusted upward within the World Trade Organization rules, if necessary. And that speaks to the discussion that was that we just had here regarding steel industry, and I've taken note of what the DG says. I think what we're trying to do is try as much as possible to save jobs and not that industries get destroyed in the process. If we can hold on until we get out of the cycle, then, you know, that will be a great achievement, I think. So that might help.
We just expedited, but I'm conscious that Honourable Quirinoff is leaving now. We won't be able to pass our budget, you know, the report.
Oh, yes. Okay, so I'll just continue. In particular, the committee must monitor the effect of the Investment Act on foreign direct investment and propose amendments to ameliorate any adverse effects, if any, in future.
We've got it in front of us, Honourable Albert. We didn't read the rest, as long as we have it.
Yes.
So I want you to add anything that you feel is not there and that requires your comment.
Madam Chair, yeah, what I've written there is what I think is acceptable to me, and if the committee accepts that, then I will be happy. Thank you very much.
Honourable Esther Hazen, can you tell me if you'll be accepting this? You've just heard the Honourable Albert. No, just sit down, Honourable Esther Hazen, please.
Okay.
you can take charge in this meeting. If we say that we, the meeting will be for so long, members say the same statement over and over that we must obey the steel price, value added fees. I mean, it's been shocked all over, and I would like you to take charge, Madam Chair, in an issue like this. I would I'm debating now, Madam
Chair. I know, so is Honourable Kronoff. Right. If you take your seat for a minute, we've got this here, we have been over it, and I'm going to indicate to you that we have one recommendation. Is that agreed? You know the recommendation we've got, we read it up. Other issues belong to the conclusions. Are we agreed? We have the DA saying they are covered, you know, that's it. And we all agreed there. So now I'll put it formally to you, the report. Okay. Can someone propose adoption of the Portfolio Committee report on Budget 34? Honourable Kalaka, seconded by?
Yes, Honourable
Esther Hazen. Right. And are there any objections? No. Right, so that's it, members. Now, what I am, I have our staff, I'm not going to delay you, they're going to finalise this here. I'll send it round the house, or the EP, what is it, EPCs, am I right? You are in, where are you, science and, are you both in science?
Mineral,
oh, very important too. Right, I'll just drop them by there. Is that okay with you? Thank you, Honourable. Yes, Sir Hazen, Honourable. Yes, Mkongi.
Oh, so you're going to give us, and then we can still also comment. Well, I'm not.
No, we have finished.
Finished.
We've adopted the report.
So the recommendations that we proposed here, and we're taking them.
They are in fact captured there already, largely. Do you follow? They are captured there. It's a matter of adjusting it. You know, I'm going to give one example here. The steel issue. We've already dealt with that. I'm not going to deal with it again in another one. The other one about the NCC, we've already referred to that. Do you follow? So it's a duplicate per se. So what we're saying is where there was something new, and the one that I saw that was new was the one you clarified here about the steel. You were concerned that it wasn't in the body, which is what we raised. It had to go back there. The other one which you've raised is the holiday clubs matter and the delays. There are issues there. That's an example of some of the delays that are experienced. That's what it is. Nothing more. So, members, I know we're all under pressure, but I think the time has come for us to allow staff to move on with the report and to look at the meeting tomorrow. So that we start at what time? I'm not sure, 9 o'clock? 9 to 11 o'clock. And the items on the agenda for tomorrow? Investment South Africa. All right, thank you. Thank you very much. I'd appreciate it if the ANC could just come over here for 1 minute, please. Thank you. I want to thank the DG. And also the DDG as well.